www.thebookshop.com. It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on beautiful Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is a balmy 69 degrees. Out at the airport, they're showing 62 degrees, fair skies, 70% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly sunny skies tomorrow. High near 66 today, high near 60 tomorrow. Overnight, we're looking for mostly clear skies and a low around 52. Light winds from the east today will turn to the southeast tonight, and then finally back to the east tomorrow, never getting above 10 miles per hour. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Aleutic Museum is in line to get money from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. Governor Mike Dunleavy has signed a state budget. And a plane crashes and sinks in Lake Iliamna. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Singer R. Kelly's getting 30 years in prison for sex trafficking, sexual exploitation of a child, racketeering, and bribery. He was convicted in federal court in New York last year. Prosecutors say Kelly led a criminal enterprise to lure fans, including minors, for his sexual gratification. Kelly's illegal marriage to the late R&B singer Aaliyah was a central focus of the case. A former backup dancer testified she saw Kelly in a sex act with Aaliyah in 1993. She was not yet 15, and Kelly was in his late 20s at the time. Aaliyah died in a plane crash in 2001. R. Kelly is expected to face another trial in federal court in Chicago in August on charges of child pornography and obstruction of justice. He also has a pending criminal case in Minnesota where he's charged with engaging in prostitution with a minor. President Biden met with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan at the NATO summit in Madrid, Spain, a day after Turkey agreed to drop its objections to Sweden and Finland joining the NATO alliance. NPR's Tamara Keith reports U.S. officials insist Biden did not offer Erdogan anything in return.
President Biden was in touch with the leaders of Finland and Sweden, as well as Erdogan, as talks about their accession to NATO intensified in recent days. But this formal sit-down meeting with the president of Turkey wasn't finalized on Biden's schedule until after the agreement was announced.
I want to particularly thank you for what you did putting together the situation with regard to Finland and Sweden.
In remarks at the start of the meeting, Erdogan didn't mention his long-standing request to purchase F-16 fighter jets from the U.S. Briefing reporters, a Defense Department official expressed openness to such a purchase, though Congress has the final say. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Madrid, Spain.
Growth in the U.S. slowed down more in the first 3 months of the year than first estimated, according to new data from the Commerce Department. Details from NPR's David Gura.
In the first 3 months of the year, when Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine, the U.S. economy shrank more than initially estimated, by 1.6% on an annual basis. That adds more fuel to fears a recession could be on the horizon. Consumer spending was also revised lower. The Bureau of Economic Analysis will release its first estimate of growth for the second quarter in late July. The Fed Reserve is hiking interest rates aggressively to fight high inflation. Fed Chair Jerome Powell, speaking at a conference in Portugal, reiterated the economy is, quote, well-positioned to withstand tighter monetary policy, and he said he hopes growth will remain positive. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 82 points before the close at 31,029. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Alutiiq Museum is one of six Alaska organizations set to receive a share of a $12.5 million grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, it's the latest financial boost for coastal communities impacted by the 1989 spill.
The grant will be split between six organizations that are part of a collaboration called the Community Organized Restoration and Learning, or CORAL, Network. Molly Odell is the Director of Archaeology and Special Projects at the Alutiiq Museum in Kodiak, which is a CORAL Network member. She says the funding will support 5 years of outreach and educational programming.
One of the main goals of the project is to do education and outreach related to resources that are affected by the spill in the spill-impacted region.
Alutiiq history on the Kodiak Archipelago dates back to more than 7,000 years ago, and relics from Native villages and camps are found scattered across the island's coastline. But Odell says many of those sites were damaged from the 1989 spill.
Archaeological resources were impacted by the spill both because some sites and artifacts were oiled and also because there was a lot of looting of archaeological sites during the cleanup.
Odell says properly handling archaeological resources became a part of training for volunteers later on in the cleanup effort. The museum has been the beneficiary of past funding from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, and Odell says the latest grant through the CORAL Network will help support the museum's existing archaeology program, including its summer internships.
We're providing training opportunities for interns to learn about archaeology, so they get to do field work and they get to see how the artifacts are cleaned and cataloged and stored in the museum.
Odell says the Alutiiq Museum also has plans to print educational materials for community members about what to do if they stumble upon artifacts. She says the museum expects to receive its share of the funding after July 1st. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Governor Mike Dunleavy signed a state budget on Tuesday that adds millions of dollars for public safety, K-12 education, and the University of Alaska system. Plus, it pays each eligible Alaskan a permanent fund dividend of roughly $3,200. The budget also includes $390 million to pay off the last oil and gas tax credit the state owes. Dunleavy says aside from those increases, operation spending is down about 10% from when he took office.
With the exception of investments in public safety and education, all of our agencies are at levels below when we came in 2019, so we've kept spending in check in much of our operating side of the budget.
The budget is fairly close to what the legislature passed in May, though Dunleavy did veto about $780 million in spending before signing it. Among the vetoes was roughly $112 million in school, university, and statewide deferred maintenance. The budget will kick in on July 1st and goes through June 30th of next year. Among the other funding Dunleavy did keep in the budget was forward funding of K-12 education. That means $1.2 billion is set aside for the next fiscal year. In the first year of his term in 2019, Dunleavy opposed forward funding education. He was sued by the legislature after he didn't send out $20 million in school funding approved the year before by the legislature. At the time, Dunleavy argued that forward funding education was unconstitutional and would bind future legislatures to the spending plans of past ones. Dunleavy says this budget's forward funding is different.
This particular approach to funding has not just the idea of forward funding, but the actual resources behind it. We have the money in hand, we have the surplus in hand to be able to do it. So that's the difference.
This year's PFD is set to be roughly $3,200, an amount lower than what the 40-year-old state formula would have set. It's still the highest dividend on record, second when adjusted for inflation. While Dunleavy campaigned on paying out a full statutory PFD, he says he's been pushing lawmakers to adopt a 50-50 plan that would split the spending between dividends and government services. A float plane carrying 7 people crashed in Lake Iliamna on Saturday evening, roughly a half a mile from Coconuck. New Halen Lodge operated the plane. State troopers in Fairbanks received a report of the crash at about 6:20 p.m. Residents reported that the plane was sinking and the passengers were in the water. Gary Nielsen of Coconuck received a call from the local village administrator about the crash and watched the scene through his binoculars.
We were just sitting at home. We got a phone call that there was a plane down that fish camp out in the water. But the airplane was upside down and well over a mile offshore and going down the lake.
Nielsen says the local response was quick and many residents volunteered to help. Troopers in Fairbanks and Dillingham coordinated with the village of Coconuck and lodges in the area to rescue the passengers by skiff. Responders took the passengers to the village clinic around 7 p.m. Only minor injuries were reported. Clint Johnson, chief of the National Transportation Safety Board, says the plane has since submerged completely into the water.
So what we know at this point right now, we have been working very closely with the folks from New Halen Lodge. And the airplane unfortunately crashed on takeoff, and the airplane unfortunately is submerged.
The board is still investigating the cause of the crash. The Iowithla Fire is currently 10.5 miles north of Dillingham and has been burning for over 2 weeks. The Alaska Division of Forestry has monitored the fire on a daily basis. Public Information Officer Brentwood Reed says the fire was hot and active on both the northwest and southeast corners this past weekend. The fire grew about 400 acres toward the southeast on Friday and Saturday. However, rain helped douse the flames, and satellites have not picked up any heat since then. The fire is currently 36,600 acres and is not a threat to nearby communities. It has been pinned between the Little Mucklung River to the west and the Iowithla River to the east. Federal fire officials say that the East Fork Fire is no longer threatening lower Yukon River communities. Officials released this determination on Saturday. The over 166,000-acre fire has burned for nearly a month near the communities of St. Mary's, Pitcus Point, Pilot Station, and Mountain Village. The fire stopped growing south toward the communities over a week ago. In recent days, it's also stopped growing and even begun retreating downhill on its northern edge. In an online update, fire officials say that several native allotments along the Andrevsky River remain at potential risk from the fire, but the nearest cabin sits 5 miles away. Firefighters have buffered these allotments to reduce the risk of fire, and crews can provide additional protection if needed. Cooler, moist weather forecast in the coming days is expected to reduce the fire risk even more. A Fairbanks teenager charged with a string of arson attacks along the Chena Hot Springs Road last summer has pleaded guilty to additional charges. 18-year-old Jameson Gallion reversed 2 not guilty pleas last month, and 17 others had a hearing on Monday. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
Monday's proceeding finalized an agreement with the state under which Jameson Gallion pled guilty to felony crimes of arson, burglary, criminal mischief, and terroristic threatening related to fires that destroyed or heavily damaged 7 structures, including a Two Rivers home and the Two Rivers Lodge, which were occupied at the time. Pointing to admissions of guilt made by Gallion to law enforcement during their investigation, Gallion's attorney, Ken Covell, says his client wants to move the case forward.
Mr. Gallion has made certain admissions in this case, and we're looking forward to doing sentencing in the matter and getting it resolved.
The courtroom was full during the hearing, a gallery that included arson victims. Both Cavell and Assistant District Attorney Anna Ralph emphasized the importance of bringing the case to a close.
Now, we have all these good people down here today. We're prepared to go ahead. Mr. Gallion wants closure on this. They want closure on this.
The state has very real concerns about finality for the victims. This is a case that has severely impacted the community of Two Rivers.
Ralph's comment was in support of a part of the plea agreement under which Gallion would have forfeited the right to withdraw his guilty pleas or seek post-conviction relief in light of a recently disclosed electronic record of law enforcement investigators' communications about the case that the defense has yet to see. Judge Paul Lyle denied that part of the agreement and asked Gallion whether he understood that going forward prior to knowing what's in the communications might still have an adverse effect on any future plea changes or post-conviction relief petitions.
The fact that you're going forward today, not knowing what's in this information, might impact your ability to prevail in that motion, to succeed on that motion. You understand that?
Yes. Gallion participated in the hearing over the phone because of a COVID-19 lockdown at the jail. Judge Lyle reviewed a range of jail times and fines Gallion faces for the various crimes and went through a 19-count indictment asking for Gallion's plea on each charge.
To CTN 004, which charges you with arson in the second degree at the Pleasant Valley Community Center on June 19th, 2021, how do you plead, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Under the plea agreement, the state is dropping four charges, two arson and two for terroristic threatening related to letters Gallion sent to fire victims. Two Rivers resident Ginger McKee, whose home was burned, objected to the state dropping an arson charge for the destruction of a rental unit on her property.
If Jameson Gallion had not struck the match that burned down our shop and our home and the home of our other tenant, the other rental would never have burned. Whether his intentions were not to burn it down, that is completely irrelevant.
McKee says she's also concerned that the plea agreement will result in a shorter sentence for Gallion. Speaking outside the courtroom after the hearing, Jameson Gallion's parents, William and Amanda Gallion, said they were unaware of any signs that their then 17-year-old son was involved in the arson attacks. And they pointed to their subsequent struggle to get him mental health care in jail.
Been working for 10 months to try to find some mental health care for him, but
it's impossible in the
state. It's impossible.
We've been denied by multiple agencies.
So it's, yeah, not being able to find out where he was at mentally and everything has been very hard for us.
Jameson Gallion's sentencing is scheduled for November 2nd through the 4th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Golden Valley Electric Association's Board of Directors voted Monday to upgrade the aging Healy Unit 1 power plant with a new emissions control system and keep it operating. But in a surprise decision, the board also decided to shut down the newer Healy 2 power plant because they said it was unreliable and becoming increasingly costly. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
For months now, Golden Valley officials have talked about the difficult decision on whether to install a new emissions control device on the 55-year-old Healy 1 power plant or shut it down by the end of 2024. Until Monday night, when an expert hired by the utility said his analysis suggested a third alternative: upgrade Healy 1 and shut down Healy 2, the newer coal-fired power plant that's been problem-plagued since it began commercial operations 4 years ago.
It is more economic to retire Healy 2.
Mike Hubbard is a utility consultant with Anchorage-based financial engineering company, and he's been working for Golden Valley over the past year since it began studying its power generating facilities. He said in the presentation Monday that he was hired to advise on the Healy 1 decision and replacement of the co-op's battery energy storage system, or BESS. But he said it soon became apparent that advances in renewable energy technology, especially wind power, could solve both problems and provide another source to replace the 50-megawatt Healy 2.
Go out and get some wind, and you'll have to do a BESS.
Hubbard says newer and more powerful battery technology could regulate the intermittent wind power by providing electricity when the air is calm. He said that, and buying more power from South Central utilities that could be transmitted up the interties, could enable Golden Valley to reduce the ongoing cost of fixing Healy 2 problems that have kept the plant operating at about half capacity. It was offline again on Monday.
We're looking at replacing coal with gas-fired generation from Anchorage.
Most of the 18 members of the public who logged into the online meeting expressed surprise and support for the recommendation. And so did mining company executives from Northern Star Resources, the Australia-based owner of the Pogo Gold Mine, and Kinross Fort Knox Gold, the Canadian-owned operation that's Golden Valley's biggest commercial customer.
For us, the current electricity situation at Fort Knox is not sustainable.
Sunil Kumar is Kinross Fort Knox's Vice President for Energy Strategy and Engineering. He told the board that the company pays substantially more for power here than in many of its other operations worldwide. And he said Golden Valley generates much more emissions than utilities for its other operations. He urged the board to adopt an ambitious plan like the one proposed by Hubbard to hold down costs and reduce greenhouse gases, or GHGs.
A mining industry needs reliable electricity at reasonable prices, but also with low GHG emissions.
After more public testimony and board discussion, it came time for a vote on the plan based on the consultant's recommendations called the Strategic Generation Plan. All seven members of the board spoke in near unanimous favor of the five-point plan, but board chair Tom DeLong disagreed with one part of it that called for spending $26.1 million on the SCR emissions control system for Healy 1. DeLong said that plant too should be shut down.
While the installation of the SCR will allow it to run in the future, it is unlikely that it will be uneconomical compared to wind, solar, and storage, which are proving to be the least expensive electric generating units in the world.
Board member Gary Newman proposed an amendment to delete the Healy 1 emissions upgrade, but the other board members defeated the amendment 5-2, with DeLong joining Newman in support. In the end, the board voted 6-1 to move ahead on the plan, with DeLong the lone dissenter. The vote called for Golden Valley to map out a process within 90 days on how it would retire Healy 2 that included help for workers who might be displaced by the shutdown. The board then voted separately to proceed with the installation of the emissions control system for Healy 1. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Whether it's through court decision, state lawmakers, or popular vote, 35 states in the United States have now legalized same-sex marriage. There are currently 15 states that ban same-sex marriage. However, there are appeals in the courts of many of these states. When you look at gay marriage from the perspective of legal rights of couples, it's clear that this is an issue of civil rights. Historically, there was nowhere for same-sex couples to legally get married in the United States until 2004. While some states did not have specific laws banning gay marriage, no states had specific laws that governed the marriage of same-sex couples. Then, an important court case, Baker v. Nelson, was decided. The same-sex marriage case from Minnesota would set the legal precedent for rulings for the next 30 years. This court case was argued on behalf of two gay student activists who were seeking to be married. The case was argued all the way to the Supreme Court, where it was dismissed based on the same reasons provided by lower courts. While the Supreme Court didn't actually hear the case, this created the precedent that lower courts could not reach a decision against it. This also prevented lower courts from examining the issue again. It wasn't until many years later that the lower courts began to look at the issue in the light of changes that had occurred in the laws governing equal treatment of Americans. Massachusetts became the first state to recognize the legal right of same-sex couples to marry on May 17, 2004. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday. It's Swedish Friday. It is the 29th day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:12. It will set again at 11:13. That will give us 18 hours and 2 minutes of daylight, a loss of 1 minute and 11 seconds compared to yesterday. The record high for this date was 86, set in 1953, and the record low was 37, set in 2003. Currently, a full 70 degrees up here on Burrow Hill, although they are only showing 62 degrees in the cool shade of the airport's valley. They have 70% humidity out there, east winds to 8 miles per hour, and 10% visibility. Look for sunny skies this afternoon, mostly clear skies tonight, and mostly sunny skies Thursday. High of 66 today, low around 52 tonight, and a high of about 60 tomorrow. East winds barely blowing at 5 miles per hour today are expected to turn to the southeast to 5 and then become completely calm this evening. For tomorrow, light east winds will turn to the southeast, maybe come up to 10 tomorrow afternoon. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon at 3:58, call it 4 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 6.5-foot tide. It'll be followed by a low tide at 8:50 p.m. of 3 feet. Over in Larsen Bay, you have a high tide coming up at 4:08 this afternoon of 11.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:39 p.m. of 4.3 feet on the west side. Well, let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 10, date issued 10 a.m. on June 27th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 28th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 30th, in the following areas. In the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Tuesday, June 28th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 30th, in the following areas. In the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. As previously announced, cost recovery fisheries began in Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishing opportunities in the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour cordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Southwest 20 today, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, south 15, seas to 3 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, we have a small craft advisory for tonight. Southwest 20 for today, seas to 5 feet. Southwest 25 tonight, seas coming up to 6 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 15, seas to 4 feet. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session tomorrow. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Among the items for discussion, codes pertaining to Emergency Services Council and Emergency Services Organization, discuss and respond to questions from the Consolidation Committee, discussion of American Rescue Plan Act projects, to review nonprofit funding applications, and to discuss Assembly summer meeting schedule. The meeting will also be live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough website. The public comments number is 907-486-3231. Packets are also available at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Other meetings coming up on July 5th, the Women's Bay Service Area Board meeting will be happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That'll be happening at 5:30 p.m. And the Assembly will be having their regular meeting a week from tomorrow on July 7th at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Good news for kids of all ages. The Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's Touch Tank will be opening up for limited hours starting tomorrow. The Touch Tank will be open every week, Thursday and Friday, from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. for the foreseeable future. If you have any questions, call the Borough at 907-486-9343.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.